Now a blue sign hurtles through space toward a green planet. Turner. Now a logo of a thick-maned lion framed by a ring of film. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Combat soldiers race over a snowy rise. A title appears, curved in the slope of the hill. Battleground. Copyright 1949. Starring Van Johnson as Holly, John Hodiak as Jarvis, Ricardo Montalban as Rodriguez, and George Murphy as Pop Stazak. This film is described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston. Described by Robin Sitton. Descriptions read by Nick Mills. Funded by the U.S. Department of Education. For more information about DVS, call toll-free 1-800-333-1203 or write to our email address, dvs@wgbh.org. More titles. With Marshall Thompson, Jerome Cortland, Don Taylor, Bruce Cowling, James Whitmore, Douglas Fowley, Leon Ames, Guy Anderson, Thomas E. Breen, Denise Darcel, Richard Jekyll, Jim Arness, Scotty Beckett, Brett King, and the original Screaming Eagles of the 101st Airborne Division who play themselves. Director of Photography, Paul C. Vogel, ASC. Story and screenplay by Robert Piroche. Musical score, Lenny Hayton. Technical advisor, H.W.O. Kinnard, Lieutenant Colonel, Infantry. Produced by Dory Sherry. Directed by William A. Wellman. A quotation appears. Bastogne must be taken. Otherwise, it will remain an abscess on our lines of communication. We must clean out Bastogne and then march on. General Heinrich von Luttwitz of the 47th Panzer Corps. More text appears. This story is about and dedicated to those Americans who met General von Luttwitz and his 47th Panzer Corps and won for themselves the honored and immortal name, the Battered Bastards of Bastogne. Now on a military base. Words appear. A U.S. Army camp, somewhere in France, December 1944. A platoon in battle fatigues performs marching drills. The three ranks of men march in tight formation as their staff sergeant calls commands. The men snap to attention, then relax. A tall private looks down the line.
Hey, Standiford. What was that number in Paris?
He laughs.
8-3-42-70. 8-3-42-70.
Right, peace.
The sergeant's cheek bulges as he chews a wad of tobacco.
There ain't no use in going back.
Jody's living in the shack.
Jody's got something you ain't got.
It's been so long I almost forgot.
Sound off.
1-2.
Sound off.
3-4.
Hayden's gone.
1-2-3-4. 1-2-3-4.
The platoon takes a step forward, then back as they cross the flat ground.
Extend. Huh.
They divide, widening their formation.
Swing right. Huh.
The head of each rank turns tightly and leads his line to the rear position. Now a paper sign, Merry Christmas, hangs in a pine tree. Two young soldiers in greatcoats stand beneath it.
Merry Christmas. That's a crock.
Beat soldier placement camps.
You're the guy who said the war would be over by Christmas.
What do you want, egg in your beer? Here we are, 2 hours from Paris.
La Belle, France. The spitting image of Camp Walters, Texas. You know, they got a man in the Army, a 2-star general that all he does is fly around in a private plane looking for ugly places, flat, sandy places. No trees, no water. Then he checks up on the climate. If it's too hot in summer for human life and too cold in winter, and if it has more rain and fog and wind and snow than any other spot he can find, then he plants the American flag and proclaims it a U.S. Army camp.
Hooper.
Ever see them drill that way, Camp Walters?
He points to the platoon alone on the drilling field. The ranks spread apart, facing in opposite directions, and perform identical sidesteps, while their upper bodies remain rigid. The short-statured sergeant rolls his shoulders as he looks over his men.
The right leg, freeze! Halt! Halt! Halt!
The tall private leans forward.
Hey, Caron du Soissons, what?
Caron du Soissons dice.
Please!
Tough pitch, hut! Right, hey! Forward,
by the Christmas tree, one private admiringly holds an eagle patch against his arm.
A screaming eagle. Boy, they know who you are when you walk down the street with that on your sleeve.
It wasn't bad enough being an infantry replacement. We have to volunteer for the 101st Airborne.
So you go in gliders instead of trucks. That's the only difference.
There must be a difference, or they wouldn't give you extra pay.
Hey, Hooper, I don't think I'll take in that movie tonight. I'll be kind of busy getting acquainted and sewing on shoulder patches.
Why'd they have to put us in different companies?
You know, maybe if we ask them, they might do something.
There's another major general. His job is to find out who your buddy is and then to split you up. Don't forget I'm in K Company.
Yeah, I won't. And don't you forget, I'm in I Company. Third platoon, second squad. So long, Hooper.
Private Hooper squats and lifts his duffel, struggling against its bulk as he loops the strap on his shoulder. Cheerily, his buddy helps steady him. Then Hooper staggers into a passing group of men in raincoats and flopping galoshes. He turns around and heads the opposite way through a bivouac of tents. His buddy watches the drilling ranks, smiling proudly, his eyes shining.
The gal I'm a-loving, and the one that's loving me is the...
Now inside a tent barracks, the tall private polishes his boots as he lies on his cot. Nearby, another man brushes a set of dentures.
Yippee-yay, come a-tie-yay, yippee-yippee-yay.
Whoa! Hey, remember that Lieutenant Normandy said he court-martialed the first man who tossed his gas mask away?
We ripped out the masks and used the carriers for toting that cognac we liberated.
Take care of that gas mask, soldier. Might save your life someday.
A man in a football uniform enters.
Boy, how'd you make out?
Oh, the lights is pretty bad, but I was really flipping them in there. Six completed passes. I'll be hot on that game tomorrow.
Tomorrow? You mean you ain't going to Paris?
Him? He'd rather play football than eat.
Chow, we've been getting, I don't blame him. But Paris.
Gonna be lonesome here, Wallowitz. The whole platoon's gone. All except the replacements.
Sergeant Wallowitz?
Yeah?
My name is Layton. I've been assigned to your squad.
Well, make yourself at home. Put on some other sack, huh? That one's mine.
I'm sorry, I didn't know.
Layton, Hooper's buddy, collects his gear and carries it to the other side of the tent. The man with false teeth climbs over the tall private and lies on the bunk beside his.
Yippee, yippee, yay!
Little Avenue in Paris. Boy, that's going to be something. Daisy May won't know you when you get back to Dog Punch.
That's for sure. That's for dang sure.
Abner, will you stop saying that? Will you, please?
Hey, fellas, look what I found.
A swaggering soldier in dress uniform bursts in.
At ease, man, at ease. Yeah. I heard the war was on his last leg, so I thought I'd better come back.
Rough in the ETO. Little scratch on his leg, and a month later he comes back in time for a 3-day pass to Paris.
It was misery in that hospital, Kip. Passes every night, champagne, l'amour, l'amour. And me brooding all the time about my dear old buddies back there defending the Republic.
Hey, will you look at that girl bait?
Service ribbons.
Hey, man, I'm getting me a mess of that fruit salad just as soon as we hit Paris.
Hey, you can have a sack next to me, Holly.
Nobody got it, have they?
No, I was just sitting here.
Timidly, Layton stands, knocking a photo from another man's cot.
It's a nice-looking little girl.
It's a boy.
Abner sits up.
Hey, what's it like, Holly?
Paris?
Yeah.
Well, of course, I spent all my spare time in the art galleries. But I happen to hear about a place that might interest you. Place Pigalle.
Layton trips between cots, falling on his face.
Place Pigalle. Pig Alley. You sort of bring your dog tags with you, because one night in Pig Alley, and you're going to think you're the
Excuse
king
me.
Of...
Holly glares at the new kid.
Because you're going to think you're the Caliph of Baghdad. You guys talk about Piccadilly Circus. Compared to Pig Alley, that's like the quiet room in a limey YMCA.
Hey, Jarvis.
Yeah?
How about you and me boarding up in Paris, huh?
What's the matter? Did Pop stays after Sonya?
Ah, Pop can't go. account of his arthritis.
I love you, Rodriguez. I love all of you. I'm getting me a private room and private bath in Paris if I have to get it at the point of a gun.
The big brain wants to get away from us common people. Hasn't got anybody around here to chat with about the Einstein theory.
What do you mean? He's got me? Why, there ain't nothing we like to talk about better.
What happened to Lieutenant Belwick? He was just your speed. Joe College.
He got hit in Holland.
Holly's face sobers. He looks away. Layton drops a duffel next to Standiford, raising a cloud of dust.
It's all right, kid. Go right ahead. Just brush me off when you're through.
Layton backs away, his eyes fixed on Standiford.
If I die in the combat zone, box me up and ship me home. Sound all clear, freeze.
Hey, holly me, boy. Bonjour, bonjour.
Hiya, Fock. What are you busting out about?
Oh, it's nothing at all, son. It's hardly worth mentioning. You're just making me a civilian, that's all.
They what?
I wish I had arthritis.
It ain't the arthritis.
I got a report from the Red Cross that my wife is too sick to take care of the kids.
So I let them talk me into accepting a dependency discharge.
Glad you made it, Pop.
Who's going to adopt Rodriguez? He'd be lost without his popsy-wopsy.
One of these days you're going to get a GI wootsy-wootsy. Rights were in those GI teeth. Such language. You should have learned a better manners, Pop.
Oh, knock it off, will you?
When do you leave, Pop?
Oh, any day now. I just have to sweat out a letter of confirmation from a higher headquarters. Hey, you'll be in Paris.
Oh, no, I decided to catch that football game.
Oh, that's swell. Be kind of rugged waiting around here all alone. Well, see you in the morning, Johnny.
Right.
You gonna miss me, Abner?
That's for sure. That's for dang sure.
Jarvis winces.
Well, I'm glad to see you guys finally got the junk off my cot.
Pop steps onto the mattress where Layton sits, flushing him off.
How about dousing that light? Paris trucks are leaving early. Okay, douse it.
Pop throws a blanket over his face. By the tent flap, Layton stands, clutching his jacket as the lanky Abner unscrews the light bulb. Now, dawn, in the barracks. Beside Abner, Kip's loose false teeth rattle as he snores. Another private sleeps in view of the photo of his infant son. A pair of boots obscures the daylight by the tent flap, where Layton sleeps curled up on a cot.
All right, roll out of them sacks, hit it, leave your cots and grab your socks.
The tobacco-chewing sergeant
Let's
pounds
go,
the
man.
Sleeping
Let's
man slow, and jostles
man.
Their
Get
cots.
Up, yourself.
I ain't going to Paris.
Nobody's going to Paris. We're moving up. On trucks.
Moving up? Where to?
Beats me. The crowd's made a breakthrough someplace. They tell me it's going to be cold, so wear your long johns and two pairs of pants. Three if you can get them on.
But they told us yesterday that we'd be off the line for good.
They didn't get the order till after midnight. Well, it's trucks this time instead of gliders. That's a good sign anyway.
He leaves.
This is for the birds, brother. Strictly for the birds.
Beats anything ever I stuck my finger in before.
General, I need a crack division to plug up that gap. A crack division, General? I'd be honored if you'd use the 101st. Awfully nice of you, old boy. Thanks a lot. Not at all, General. Not at all.
Maybe the adjutant could put in a phone call or something.
Yeah. It's only a technicality.
Oh, I forgot to tell you, man. It's a secret move, so rip off your shoulder patches.
The squad half-heartedly crawls out of their cots. Standing where he slept, Layton pouts and looks at his new eagle patch. Darting his eyes about him, he grabs a corner of the patch and pulls. Later, transport trucks line the bivouac as a supply sergeant loads up the men.
Hey, Sarge, you got any of them rubber overshoes? Them goulashes?
Can't fit you, Abner. Your feet's too small.
A lieutenant stops Abner, who drags a pouch along the ground.
Take care of that gas mask, soldier. Might save your life someday.
Yeah, if you can find some cognac.
Pop jogs to the truck.
No dice, huh?
I gotta wait for the letter. Regulations.
It's gonna be a cold trip, Pop. Maybe you can ride in the driver's cab.
Huh? No. Let's get the show on the road.
About the new platoon leader? Yeah, fresh off the boat.
I understand your problems, men. I used to be an enlisted man myself. For 6 months, maybe.
and 17 weeks at OCS, and he's an officer and gentleman by special act of Congress. Sound off!
Tobacco juice stains the sergeant's chin as he grins widely, then squirts a dark stream through his lips. Now a jeep leads a line of covered transport trucks away from the tent barracks. Leaning out of their truck, a platoon member yanks a hand-painted banner reading, "Paris, here we come," from its side. The convoy jounces along a beaten dirt road, splashing through muddy water in deep puddles. Inside the transport, the troops jostle uncontrollably, jolting forward and back on benches and on the truck bed. Seated near the tailgate, Private Holly is flecked with mud. He stands from the bench and gingerly rubs his backside. Now, on the outskirts of a town, an MP waves the convoy through. A sour-faced Jarvis sees an old man on the street.
Quel est le nom de ce village?
Well, what'd he say? Where are we?
Are you kidding?
Parlez-vous français, monsieur?
Oui, oui, tout suite.
Cigarette?
Oh, merci beaucoup.
Cigarette?
I don't smoke, but thanks anyway. Thanks a lot.
Later, as the truck quakes over ridges in the road, Kip's dentures flap loosely in his mouth. He forces them back with his thumb.
What time is it, Hanson?
11:30.
What? It can't be that late. We left at 2 o'clock.
11:30 a.m., Garvey. Central Standard Time. Pretty near lunchtime in Springfield.
You mean you never changed your watch?
What's the use of changing your watch?
What's the use? You're here. You're not in Springfield, Illinois.
I hear you.
Hanson leans on his rifle, his long face staring blankly behind round wire eyeglasses.
This is what I like about the infantry. You always know just what's going on. How do you like this guy? He don't like in the infantry.
He must be of his
job. He never had it so good.
He found a home in the army.
Pop and Standiford exchange a glance. Suddenly the truck stops.
Chewing gum? Cigarette for mama? Cigarette for mama? Chewing gum?
Two small girls in cloth coats stand behind the truck. Pop nudges Rodriguez.
Chewing gum, cigarette from mama. Chewing gum.
As he throws out squares of gum, a young woman steps into the street.
Woo-hoo!
Get a load of mama!
She laughs and cocks her head.
Oh, I like to keep her in chocolate for about a week.
Voulez-vous venir, je vais vous chauffer, vous poser un peu. Vous tous, venez prendre du café, je vous en prie, venez chez moi.
What's she saying, Jarvis? What's she saying?
She wants to know if we'd like to come inside and warm up.
Yes, warm up, please.
Oh, brother!
The little girls scramble to escape the unseen planes, while the woman collects the gum from the road. A blonde, bull-necked soldier bolts from the transport, followed by Layton, who ducks into the doorway. He hugs the wall, watching the gaping, wide-eyed children do the same. In the truck, Rodriguez covers his head as slips of paper flurry about them. Jarvis grabs a leaflet which shows a field of crosses.
Welcome to the 101st Airborne Division. I like these secret moves.
Yeah, we sure slip one over on the crowds.
How do they find out these things? Who tells them?
I keep them posted. Shortwave.
Well, somebody does.
Well, they occupied France for 4 years. Naturally, they left a few spies when they pulled out.
Hey, that's an idea. Why don't us GIs hire some spies so we'll know what's going on once in a while?
Get him inside!
Hopping to the ground, Holly stretches his back. The Frenchwoman ushers the children inside.
Allez, mes enfants, allez manger vos bonbons. Allez, allez, mes chéris.
Holly looks down at the sergeant.
Hey, Kenny, how about getting these men in out of the hot sun?
Wallowitz, Garby, in there with the 2nd platoon, this corner house.
Ah, très bien, oui, oui.
He runs toward the Frenchwoman.
Oh, I forgot to tell you. Put those shoulder patches back on.
Hey, Pop, I hear we're bedding down here.
Overnight?
Yeah, looks like a good house, too. Smoke coming out the chimney.
Well, for once, we get a break.
Rodriguez smiles at the older man, who wears a scarf under his helmet to cover his ears. The platoon files past a mud-spattered sign reading, Bastogne.
Stogney. I won't be forgetting this place in a hurry.
I wouldn't mind hauling up hail at Christmas.
I hear tell we might. All the rumors is good ones.
Can't use that type on my milk diet.
In a corner of the room, Polly jitterbugs with the young blonde woman with a buxom figure and wide, dimpled face. She tries to match his high kicks in her long, straight skirt. As the men make beds on and around the furniture, Jarvis scowls by a radio.
This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, broadcasting from London.
Let's see if we can get some news.
What's he sell?
Wait till he slows down.
Yes, Kerr. I'll guarantee you she can spray and see Deutsch.
Let's live a little, huh, Jarvis? Come on, Mama, get yourself in gear.
Oh, no, no. Not, Mama. These two little children, they live with me, but... Je ne suis pas la maman sur les enfants d'un vieux voisin à côté qui a été bombardé. Un grand bombardement absolument épouvantable. C'est une chose terrible, épouvantable. Il va falloir se mordre tous les deux.
Doucement, s'il vous plaît. Doucement.
Oh, je vous demande pardon, je parle trop vite naturellement. Je ne suis pas leur maman. Ce sont des enfants d'un village voisin qui a été bombardé. Un grand bombardement. Le papa et la maman sont morts. Tous les deux. Vous avez compris?
Oui. She said she's not the mother of the two little girls. They're from a town near here. Bombed out. Both parents killed.
Kip glowers.
Yeah, they all got a sad story.
Oh, let's cut a rug, Denise, huh? Dance, eh?
No, no, we can't, you know.
You gotta keep paying these taxi dancers, Holly. Fork over another chocolate bar.
What you say, please?
I said, do you think the rain will hurt the rhubarb?
What do you say?
He said, do you think...
Est-ce qu'il y a encore du café?
Oh, oui, du café. Plenty of café. Tout suite.
Merci.
Tout sweet. Anything you want. Sure, as long as you pay for it. They're all alike over here.
Yes, they're all alike, Kip. Scared, hungry, lonely.
Come on, stop beating your gums. Let a guy get some sleep.
Yes, about that time.
We sure come a fur piece today. Okay, Kip.
Okay.
Abner pulls up the blanket they share, exposing his long, stockinged feet. Denise brings him coffee.
Poor, tired soldier. You want?
Thank you.
She tilts her chin at Holly's tired face.
I go now?
I guess so. I'm all beat up.
All beat up?
He talks behind his hand.
You know, it never fails. Every time you meet a pretty babe, you're either out on your feet or you get the order to move.
What do you say, please?
There's nothing. Nothing.
Thank you very much.
She smiles at the broad-chested Holly, her hands loaded with chocolate rations.
Good night.
God.
Jarvis rises suddenly from the floor.
Where are you going?
God.
Oh.
As Jarvis leaves the room through a door designed with wooden V patterns, Holly pours a cup of coffee at the stove. He dashes into the hallway where Denise chatters amiably with Jarvis.
What'd she say? What'd she say?
She said she's going to hide the chocolate from the kids till Christmas.
Wolowitz enters.
Brother, I wish I knew for sure we'd be here tomorrow.
You'll be here.
Are you sure?
All we do is lie around till the fog lifts, so the Air Corps can come up and win the war for us.
Well, in that case, I guess I'll take a chance.
This may go down in history as the greatest gamble of the war.
Good night, Denise.
Good night, soldier.
He hesitates.
Hey, Wolowitz, are you absolutely sure?
Yeah, the CO told us himself.
Each step down swings Denise's shapely hips from side to side. Holly's eyes dart left and right.
Hey, Denise.
Oui?
Wake me up early, will you?
Peut-être.
As she descends the landing, he ducks his head, following her with wistful eyes. Turning back to the door, he yawns, scratching his wavy blonde hair. Inside, the sleeping platoon is spread from wall to wall.
I had to report this to the Inspector General. There's supposed to be 18 inches between bunks. This is dangerous. It's
spreads germs.
He stares at Abner and Kip laid out on a tabletop. Stroking his chin, Holly snaps his fingers, then picks his way carefully to Abner's side of the table bed. He nudges the long-legged man repeatedly with the back of his hand until Abner inches over. Bracing himself on the wall, Holly climbs over a sleeping man on the floor, then shoves under the blanket, knocking Kip from the other side of the table and into a baby's cradle. Kip rocks and snores through clicking teeth, never stirring. Now, on the darkened street, Layton shivers in a doorway, pulling his collar around his throat. An armed soldier appears, a stark outline against the thick white fog. Jarvis's face is barely visible when he turns.
There's some hot coffee on the stove.
Oh, I can use it.
Layton cranes his neck upward.
Don't worry about that plane. It's one of ours, I think.
Layton goes inside, leaving Jarvis staring into the billowing fog, his rifle pointed at the ground. He paces aimlessly among the leaflets littering the mud, then stops, braces himself, and aims his weapon.
Oh, password.
Amber.
Onion.
A shadow moves into view, a soldier trudging wearily under his gear.
Thought the 101st was the only division here.
They will be as soon as the rest of us can get out.
What's up?
We're a little over to the east. Been there for weeks without firing a shot. Then they started coming.
Tanks, planes, everything you ever heard of. And then some.
The Jerry plane turned on a loudspeaker in English. Said Hitler's going to give Paris to the Germans for a Christmas present.
But they told us it was just a weak little counterattack.
Yeah. They'll probably tell you that this is a strategic withdrawal.
Jarvis sets his rifle butt against the ground and stares after the departing men. Morning in Bastogne. Private Holly tiptoes into a chicken coop and gathers eggs from the hen roosts, storing them in a pouch formed from a handkerchief. As he creeps out, Denise emerges through the slanted cellar door.
Good morning, soldier.
Oh, bonjour, bonjour.
She smiles alluringly, holding the cellar door above her head.
I'll be back in a minute.
Inside, the platoon is gearing up.
Hey, Betts, keep an eye on... What's going on?
Me and General McAuliffe decided to move I Company up on the line. That is, if you agree.
I should have known better.
Maybe she'll give you a refund on those chocolate bars.
Hey, how much time have I got? 10 minutes? 5 minutes?
Anything you got to do, you better do in 30 seconds.
His face falls as he peers out the window at Denise, who feeds the chickens.
Saddle up. Let's go, Holly.
Now on a country road outside Bastogne, Sergeant Wolowitz leads his squad in a loose formation. Their helmets bear a regimental insignia, like the club suit from a deck of cards. Rodriguez, walking a few steps behind Pop, eats a piece of fruit, while Jarvis reads a newspaper as he walks. Layton, his gear in tidy array, nervously looks around him at the barren countryside. Holly hitches his rifle strap on his shoulder and holds the fragile bundle of fresh eggs out in front of him. Absently, Abner sings to himself. The bull-necked Betts walks with him, a cache of goods stored in his helmet netting. As they enter a clearing, Pop painfully flexes his right shoulder, where he carries his weapon. Rodriguez takes the rifle from him and carries it in his free arm. The men exchange a smile. Now Pop removes the gas mask strapped on his chest and tosses it into a ditch where others have been discarded. One by one, the platoon's masks hit the dirt, including Layton's, who sighs with relief as he throws it. The men scatter into the ditches, Holly sliding feet first from the road. He holds his bundle up for inspection, then rolls his eyes heavenward. Removing one delicate egg from the bundle, he kisses it tenderly. Layton, face down in the dirt, slowly lifts his head and looks over his shoulder. Across the road from where he lies stands a large roofed crucifix, moist and glistening in the fog. Layton closes his eyes and silently moves his lips. Later, as the men rest on the ground, the small Sergeant Kinney jogs by with the lieutenant on his heels.
Drop your packs and roll. Drop your packs and roll. Drop your packs and roll.
Third platoon, on your feet. We got that patch of woods to clear.
Third platoon, any time is a dirty detail.
All right, let's not be having any talk like that, soldier.
All right, let's go. Keep sight of the man on each side of you. Watch out for snipers.
Crouching with weapons aimed, they take to the woods, eventually disappearing into the haze. At the tree line, Standiford suddenly stops advancing and stands upright.
Snipers, the man says.
He rips his corporal chevrons from his sleeve, then nudges Sergeant Wolowitz to do the same. Amid the cover of branches, the lieutenant plucks the bars from his shoulder loops. Layton gropes through a stand of pines, holding his rifle loosely in one hand. A few feet ahead, Jarvis crouches through a break in the trees, his weapon at the ready. Layton lifts his own rifle and follows, imitating Jarvis's creeping posture. Tripping on a tree root, he falls on his belly, dropping his rifle as he covers his head with both hands. His oversized helmet slides over his eyes. When he rights himself again, the squad is nowhere to be seen. His fierce expression falls as his frightened eyes widen. A hand reaches from behind a tree, holding a lumpy bundle aloft like a torch. Layton smiles briefly at the sight of Private Holly.
Second squad, over here, dig in.
The men partner up and unfold their entrenching shovels. Wolowitz approaches Corporal Standiford.
You're in charge till I get back, Standiford. I'm going up to see the lieutenant.
Yeah, well, don't go volunteering for any patrols.
Who do I dig with, Sergeant?
That's right, we've got an odd man. Well, you can triple up with me and Hanson.
Thanks. You want me to go along with you now?
Well, you better stay and get the hold started. Come on, Hanson, let's go.
Hanson trots by the bewildered Layton, handing off the entrenching shovel as he passes. Later, Layton kneels on the ground, unloading soft, dark soil from a hole about a foot deep. Abner stretches out beside him, using a pack for a pillow.
Take 10, Jarvis. Time for me to spell you.
Jarvis crawls out on knees and elbows and lies down beside Layton. Now in his woolen sweater, Layton stands ankle deep in his hole. Pausing with a shovel full of dirt, he stares at Pop, who naps on the ground beside him. He flexes a moment, as if to toss the dirt on the sleeping man, then pitches the soil aside. Later, in shirt sleeves, Layton yanks on an exposed root in his foxhole. Across the way, he sees Staniford easily wrench an arm-sized root out of the earth. Hitching his trousers and spitting on his palms, Layton grabs hold again, pulling so hard that he tumbles backward, somersaulting into another group's trench. A private raises his shovel at him.
Get out of here! Sorry.
Now at Holly's foxhole, the brash private builds a nest of straw in his helmet liner for his cargo of eggs. Betts stands waist-deep in the trench behind him, while nearby, Layton works on his knees, his sleeves rolled past his elbows. Holly cracks an egg into his steel helmet and chucks the shell over his shoulder onto Betts. Standiford emerges from the forest and dumps an armload of pine limbs into his foxhole, completely covering Kip.
Let's not try to reach China this time, eh, Betts?
Oh, there's no sense digging if you don't go deep.
The last time we dug one together, you went so deep that when I climbed out in the morning, I got the bends.
Bet's head bobs out of the hole as he heaves dirt out at Holly, nearly smothering a small fire he's built with sticks. Holly pushes the growing campfire to a safe distance with his gloved hands, then holds his helmet pot of scrambled egg yolk over the flame. Now Layton greets the returning Wolowitz.
How's it look?
Great. Only one thing wrong. We're moving.
What?
You heard me. It ain't my idea. All right, saddle up, everybody. Let's go.
Oh, no!
On the march again, Holly carries the swirling raw eggs in his upturned helmet. In front of him, Kip repeatedly flips a pebble into the air.
Once, just once, I'd like to dig a foxhole and find out that's the one I'm sleeping in.
The pebble flies over his shoulder into Holly's breakfast. Later, they dig new foxholes.
How will you stop yapping? First and third squad's got to run patrols all night. All we got to do is...
Stafford, back over. I'm pulling the first shift on the roadblock.
Okay. Hey, you better take a blanket with you. This fog...
really gets to you. Hey, I feel kind of woozy myself.
Staniford's face shines with sweat. Now, Layton squats happily on his bedroll as Hansen starts digging.
Let's go, Hansen.
Just get it started. We'll finish it up.
Dolefully, Layton sets down his rifle. Near the cover of sapling pines, Rodriguez works at his hole. His partner plods through the fog, appearing over a rise in the path as Rodriguez works a stone out of the dirt.
Bob, when you went to that camp in New York, did you ever phone your wife?
Sure.
What did it cost?
Nickel, what'd you think?
Oh, that's right. She came there to see you. Well, did you phone your kids long distance?
Yeah, just before we shipped out. Why?
What did that cost?
Oh, a couple of bucks for 3 minutes. Why, Johnny?
Well, I was thinking, it's probably about as far from New York to Wichita, where your kids were, as it is from Wichita to Los Angeles, where my folks are. And when you get back home, what would that be? 200 francs? Oh, I'll send you a bill, Johnny. Tell him that I... Well, you'll think of something. And if it runs over 3 minutes, it's okay.
Later, the platoon beds down for the night. Staniford lies down in his hole, and Holly builds a new fire. He pulls a spoon from his breast pocket, then takes a deep sniff of the egg mixture.
There is a boarding house far, far away, where they have ham and eggs 3 times a day.
Wolowitz approaches the campsite.
Put out that fire. Getting dark, Holly. Put on that steel pot and get over to the roadblock. Bring on a shift tonight, you, Kip, and the new man. They said to look out for crowds wearing GI uniforms.
Well, what about the password? That might be nice to know in case somebody thinks we're crowds.
Bug jetter.
Thanks.
He empties the eggs into a canteen cup, then clamps the helmet over his liner, oozing strings of raw egg in front of his face. Standing, he hands the cup to Betts.
Kip, Betts, don't get any dirt in these eggs.
The stocky Betts eyes them suspiciously.
Okay, okay, you get half of them.
The private's dirty, boyish face brightens, and he takes the cup eagerly. He climbs from his hole as the roadblock detail leaves camp. After hanging the cup's handle on a tree limb, Betts squats at the head of Staniford's one-man trench, where the corporal shivers in the dirt under blankets.
How do you feel, Staniford?
Oh, terrible. It's settling down my chest. I'm almost sure I have a fever.
I had a fever in Holland, but the medics wouldn't let me go off the line.
You have to have 102. That's a regulation. Hey, listen to that voice. I can hardly talk.
Yeah, sounds good.
Now at the roadblock, Layton stands guard while Holly and Kip hole up under a bombed-out jeep. Layton suddenly aims up the road into the fog.
Hold! Password!
Fire!
Jitter!
Layton waits, nervously smiling, as a six-man squad materializes from the shadows.
What is this, Charlie Company?
No, sir, item.
I Company? This must be the road to New Chateau.
I think it is.
You want to be sure of things, soldier.
Holly notices a glint of lieutenant's bars on the officer's shoulder.
Is there a bridge up ahead?
Yes, sir, about a half a mile up.
Good. Let's go.
Hi.
Holly scowls sleepily as the squad passes through the roadblock.
Smart cookie, wearing his bars on patrol. Must be a new replacement.
The soldiers turn with the road and are swallowed by the fog. Soon after, as the squad continues on its way, one man clumsily tromps on the foot of another.
Don't let that happen again. Speak English.
Yes, sir.
Dawn at the campsite. A heavy snowfall carpets the ground, falling furiously over the rises and depressions of the platoon's foxholes. Two long, stockinged feet poke from under a snow-covered blanket. In another hole, a soldier sleeps with his blanket tucked over his face like a mask. He stirs, holding out his gloves to the falling snow. Holly rips the veil from his face and stares at the sky.
Oh, no!
He reshrouds himself and folds his arms. Now Rodriguez springs from his hole.
Look, Bob! It's snowing! It's snowing! I never saw snow up close before. It's beautiful!
You didn't by any chance hear that it's kind of cold and a little on the wet side, did you?
Man, it's really coming down.
Well, close the window, Johnny. And fix that hole in the roof.
Rodriguez finds some boots.
Hey, Abner. Abner, you ought to know better than take off your boots in a foxhole. You might want to start running fast.
Can't sleep with wet boots on.
I better just wear your galoshes till they dry out.
I ain't got no goulashes.
He dumps the snow from his oversized shoes, then cradles them under his arm. Rodriguez trots into the woods, smiling at the slanting snow pelting his face. Suddenly, he takes a running start at a short hill and drops into a slide. Back at the campsite, the winter storm brings the squad out of their holes. Layton approaches Betts, who covers his hole with pine limbs.
Hey, where'd you get those branches?
Now, where do you generally get branches?
Well, I didn't know if those woods have been cleared.
Yes, sure. K Company's in there.
K Company? Yeah. Hey, I got a buddy in K Company.
Dashing into the woods, he comes upon a soldier hacking at branches with his bayonet.
You better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why.
Is this K Company?
Yeah.
Where'll I find Hooper?
Hooper? Never heard of him.
Bill Hooper, I know he's in K Company.
Well, he's not in my platoon. That first hole is the company CP. They'll know where he is.
Thanks.
Santa Claus.
Layton rushes excitedly toward the next man at a foxhole.
Hey, what platoon is Hooper in? William J. Hooper?
Nobody by that name in K Company.
Yes, there is. He came in with the new replacements just the other day.
Well, that was his name, eh? Hey, Sergeant.
What's up?
That kid that got it last night. Name is Hooper. William J. Hooper.
Well, now I can finish making out my morning report. Thanks.
Layton frowns tightly.
Direct hit on his foxhole. A mortar. You don't hear him coming, you don't know what hit you.
We didn't even know his name.
We didn't even find his dog tags.
His back turned to the men. Layton's shoulders stiffen, then slowly fall. Now, mail call at I Company's camp. Private Hansen opens a box of rations.
Jarvis. Betts. Hansen. Jarvis. Chatsburg News. Chatsburg News. Chatsburg News.
Ah! Holly rejects the papers.
Butler. Well, little Abner gets one. The Dogpatch Gazette.
I'll take it.
Pop waits by the sergeant, looking over his shoulder as the envelopes are read off.
Sorry, Pop. It'll probably come up in the next batch, Pop.
You act as if I want a discharge. Man, I like it here.
Stick around, Kenny. We're going to choose up sides for a snowball fight.
He trudges away. A small group huddles around a fire.
Hand these letters out with the rations, Hanson.
They're all dinner. The ones without coffee.
Dinner rations with that vitamin-packed lemonade powder. Simply add water and serve ice cold.
Delicious!
About that patrol, Kenny,
I can't let you go on it, Wolowitz. I want to be sure that you'll be around to take over the platoon if I have to go back. My feet froze up pretty bad last night.
Well, I want three volunteers to go out on a patrol. You, and you. You're in charge, Holly.
Why am I always volunteering for patrol? Just a cowboy.
All right, this is the deal, Holly. G2 says the crowd strapped some paratroops last night, and they might be hiding in that patch of woods on the other side of that farm.
G2, wonderful how they always know what's cooking.
Yeah, well, I can tell you something they do know. Last night, some crowds in GI uniforms infiltrated right through this area. They blew up a bridge on the road to New Chateau.
Was one of them wearing lieutenant bars?
How did you know?
No, we get all the latest rumors.
Rumor? My eye. They captured one of them.
Spoke English perfect. Knew our password, plan of deployment, everything.
Staniford staggers toward them.
Hey, Kenny, how about showing me the way to the aid station? I'm freezing.
Feeling any better?
Worse. Much worse. Never felt so sick in my life. Maybe I've even got pneumonia.
His feverish face brightens beneath the blanket he wears like a shawl.
He's really bad.
Yeah, he's a cinch to go back to the field hospital. Maybe even to Paris.
I don't know. Got penicillin, he's liable to be back in a day.
Yeah, a good clean flesh wound is better. Then they gotta send you back.
Betts offers Leighton a cigarette.
No thanks, I don't smoke.
Guys get sick, guys get wounded. Nothing ever happens to me.
Nothing. Except that time you broke your boss's choppers. It was when you were back, Holly. Kip found out about a regulation. You can't keep a man in the line unless he's got at least 6 teeth of his own.
I didn't know nothing about the regulation.
So he broke his GI teeth with the butt of his rifle.
I ran into a tree trunk in the dock.
Anyway, he was off the line for 2 weeks getting a new set made.
Let's get this patrol on the road.
Holly glances skyward.
That's incoming mail!
They flee, diving for the nearest foxholes. The campfire where they were standing and Holly's bucket of eggs take a direct hit.
Hey, Holly, I think your eggs are about done.
Kip smiles, flapping his upper plate.
We've had good deals before, but this is the best one yet. This is great. I don't ever want to go back. I found a home in the Army.
She's got fine teeth. Thinner mouth.
Screwing his eyes shut, Abner clamps his hands over his ears. Rodriguez lights a cigarette and puts it between Pop's lips.
Of course you can see snow from L.A. Way off in the mountains.
Now Betts pops out of his branch covering and scrambles to the hole's ridge.
They got us zeroed in. I'm getting out of here.
He runs unarmed across the debris-strewn field.
Betts!
Sergeant Wolowitz huddles with Leighton.
Well, I hope he makes it. They should never have sent him back on the line. Some guys just can't take it. Wolowitz, something I want you to know. My name is Leighton. I know it is. I just wanted to be sure.
Wolowitz hands the timid private his lit cigarette.
Thanks.
The kid takes a deep drag as snow and debris continue to fall. Frowning, he takes a closer look at the cigarette. As everything blurs for a moment, he shakes his head. Later, Holly's squad goes on patrol. The snow has subsided and thick fog has returned. The three men, Holly, Rodriguez, and Jarvis, emerge from the tree cover and approach a smoldering, bombed-out farmhouse. Cautiously, they circle the building, its wooden walls smoking in the cold air. A Jeep chassis sits stranded atop a snowdrift. Holly peers into the house, where flames lick at the front porch's support beams. They stand in a three-point array, rifles resting in their left palms. Their baggy fatigue pants have pouchy pockets. Ammunition cartridge belts crisscross their backs.
This is what G2 calls a patch of woods. A whole division could be hiding in that forest.
Nice job for the three-man patrol.
Yeah, if we don't get back, that's how they'll know we ran into some krauts.
Snow cakes the soles of their boots as they move stealthily to where a bend in the road meets the curtain of fog. An approaching Jeep sends them running for cover.
What's the password?
Texas.
Keeping cover, they may be German.
Any line on these woods, Major?
I didn't hear the counter sign.
Oh, Liga. Texas Liga.
Will this road take us to 3rd Bat headquarters?
Straight ahead.
Get going.
Just a minute. What is a Texas Liga, Major?
How's that?
I said, what's a Texas Liga?
It's some kind of baseball term.
What kind?
A safe hit just over the head of the infield.
Nobody asked you. How'd the Dodgers make out this year?
Hey, who's your commanding officer, soldier?
Whoever he is, he knows how the Dodgers made out.
Let's see your dog tags.
What?
Come on, we're not taking any chances.
Sprechen Sie Deutsch.
Hey, what is this?
Was ist dein Name?
What kind of nonsense?
Schnell, Name, Sprechen Sie.
Drop those rifles. You, who's Betty Grable going with?
Cesar Romero.
Shut up. Who's the dragon lady?
She's interrogating the pirates.
What's a hot rod?
A hopped-up jalopy.
Hello, Joe, what do you know?
Just got back from a vaudeville show. I guess they're okay.
Thank you, Sergeant.
A PFC major, praying for civilians. That's why I believe in being careful. May I suggest, sir, that you study up on baseball?
Yeah, I guess I'd better. And by the way, you might tell your buddy that Cesar Romero is out. She's married to Harry James.
Holly's patrol waves the major's jeep on.
Let's go.
The three men disperse as they re-enter the woods, staying within sight of each other as they duck under the ice-laden needles of low-hanging pine branches. Holly circles a tall, bushy evergreen, then leads the men to a patch of woods engulfed with fog. The milky clouds wisp around their legs above the frozen ground. Arriving at a fallen log coated in snow, Holly dusts off a clean space and takes a seat.
Yeah, they really should have sent out a bigger patrol.
Well, if you want to goof off.
Who said anything about goofing off?
Nobody. I'm just saying the best way is to tell them you heard voices talking in German.
Let's say we heard voices talking in Japanese and let G2 figure that out.
Jarvis sits on the log, removes his woolen gloves, and takes a folded newspaper from his pocket.
Paper any good?
Best in the world. Sedalia News.
Taking it from him, Holly unfolds the front page.
Keep your gloves off for 2 minutes and you'd have popsicles instead of fingers.
Hey, get a load of this. Our Changing Times by Mrs. Donald Jarvis. Pinch hitting for your favorite columnist and her favorite husband, now on active duty U.S. Army.
Well, you knew I worked on a newspaper.
Yeah, but a column, you must be pretty good.
I was too good. I wrote a piece about the real meaning of the war, the fight against fascism, why every American had to get in there and pitch. Logic was magnificent. Couldn't resist it. Next thing I knew, I was on a troop train, waving bye-bye to my wife.
Came the dawn, huh?
Yeah. The only one thing gets me. When you work on a newspaper, I'd get those wire releases and know that I was the first person in town who had the news. All the news. I guarantee you my wife knows what's going on in Bastogne. All I know is what's happening to the 2nd Squad and the 3rd Platoon of I Company.
An object whizzes by their faces. At the edge of the clearing, Rodriguez packs another snowball.
Watch this one.
He rears back, lifting his leg high like a pitcher, then fires the ball into the woods.
Stay right! Can't hit them if you can't see them.
He holds up his hand, catching an imaginary baseball, and glares at his catcher.
Now, the count's 3-2. Man on 1st and 3rd. 2 out. He's the one that counts.
He goes into the stretch, glancing at the base runners before laying a high, hard one over a bush and into the mist. Immediately, the ball returns, arching into Rodriguez's hands. A GI leaps over the bush.
Foul ball! Come on, let's have a fast one. Burn it in, boy, burn it in, come on.
From a batter's stance, the GI throws a snowball after Rodriguez's pitch.
I hit, right over 2nd base. Didn't you see the center fielder make that shoestring catch? You're out. How about it, Ops, huh?
Sound off, pal, password.
Don't you get it? Right over 2nd base. Texas?
Liga. You in charge?
No, the lieutenant.
An officer steps through his squad.
Hiya, Phyllis.
Holly freezes at the sight of the lieutenant's bar on his helmet.
What's the situation, Lieutenant?
Nothing but pine trees in these woods. We've been all through them.
Well, I guess our mission's accomplished.
Courtesy of K Company. You can tell them to stop worrying about this area.
Them and us both, Lieutenant. Thanks. Well, I guess we might as well partee, huh?
So long.
So long.
Holly walks away stiffly while Jarvis and Rodriguez wave friendly goodbyes. The lieutenant and the baseball-playing GI exchange a satisfied look. Now, in a thicket safely away from the clearing, Holly stops and brings the men to his side.
Come on a double. They're crouched.
They break into a run, rifles held high. In the woods behind them, shadows in the haze take aim. Holly's patrol flops to the snow, shielding themselves behind tree trunks. From the clearing, the squad of spies advances. Flashes of gunfire pierce the fog. Rodriguez hisses to Jarvis, signaling him with a waving hand. Heading for a fallen tree, Rodriguez squirms on his belly, kicking dirty snow behind him like a wake. The butt of Holly's rifle is suddenly shot away as he reloads. Now Rodriguez tugs the pin from a grenade. Pressing himself flat behind the log, he hurls it blindly. The patrol races back to the clearing, colliding with a German soldier so obscured by the fog that only his boots are visible. The I Company GIs push him backward toward the burning farmhouse. Soon they're engaged in hand-to-hand combat with three enemy soldiers in the snow around the abandoned jeep. Behind a tree, two pairs of boots grapple for position until one pair convulses weakly, stiffens, then falls still. Rodriguez stands, blood running from his mouth. He wipes it with his sleeve, then spits a mouthful onto the fallen man. Another group of matched galoshes fights from a standing position. A man is kicked into a snowdrift. Holly unsheathes a bayonet tied to his leg and lunges at his opponent.
Come on!
Jarvis stabs his man.
Come on! Come on! Hey, Max, drop that!
Rodriguez lurches forward, his mouth agape. Holly rushes to drag him out of the line of fire.
No, Dinko, will you? If they hit without getting away, maybe I've got a chance. Go on.
Send a patrol back.
Clawing at the snowdrift, Rodriguez worms under the chassis of the abandoned jeep.
Langsam. Leise.
Now in the forest, German soldiers inch closer to the farmhouse. While Holly and Jarvis take cover on the porch, Rodriguez buries himself beneath the axle. Using a pine branch, he erases their footprints from the snow. Pushing more snow out from under the jeep, he fills the hole that leads to his hiding place. Holly pants deeply through open lips, his eyes staring widely, and his shock of blonde hair bristling on his scalp. He braces against the stone walls of the gutted house. Jarvis aims his rifle, statue still. Soon, Rodriguez is completely covered by the drift. From their vantage point on the bombed-out porch, the scene appears deserted. Smiles flash briefly on his buddy's mouths.
Let's go.
Dodging burning beams in their path, they escape through the backside of the house.
Sie sind uns alle da entwischt. Durchs Haus. Mir nach.
A German wearing an American uniform drops to one knee against the side of the jeep, then waves his men from the woods. They run forward from all directions, moving haltingly toward the house. Later, Holly and Jarvis meet up with the lieutenant back at camp. Staff Sergeant Kinney leans his foot against their campfire.
You sure they were enemy tanks?
We saw them, Lieutenant.
Think we've got enough anti-tank grenades to do any good?
We ain't got any.
The lieutenant steps away from the fire and beckons Kinney to follow. A giant safety pin holds the sergeant's short coat closed. He hobbles on the sides of his frozen feet. As Kinney follows the officer to a niche cut into a boulder, he bites off a plug of tobacco. The serious-faced lieutenant removes a map from the small burrow.
Mind if I make a suggestion, Lieutenant?
What?
Well, sir, our usual defense against tanks is to call for artillery and then run like a jackrabbit.
We got orders to hold these positions.
All right, sir. Well, let's call for artillery and keep our heads down. And
we could send out some bazooka men. If we had any bazookas. Put in a call for artillery.
Yes, sir.
Kinney ducks into the boulder niche and lifts the field radio receiver.
What a break. Artillery's got that farmhouse zeroed in. Concentration 1-7.
Jarvis and Holly exchange a frightened glance.
Item 3 to item. Kraut tanks. By burning farmhouse. Concentration 1-7. 1-7. Roger. Start the fireworks.
That's great artillery. Can't miss. They've got Rodriguez to use for an aiming stake.
Tell Wallowitz to send out for Rodriguez as soon as this barrage lifts.
With what? A sponge?
I gotta get me a rifle.
Any extra ones, Garvey?
No, we haven't had any casualties yet.
There's a rifle waiting for you, Holly. Your squad sent back for the meat wagon after the last shelling.
Who was hit, Doc?
Wallowitz.
Holly and Jarvis leave the campfire and stride purposefully across the snow. Now at the second squad's camp, medics load a stretcher onto the back of a jeep. As the men approach, they see Wallowitz's bleeding arm splinted to a board.
Is he bad? A shell landed right on the edge of his foxhole. His shoulder's like a sieve.
Wallowitz frowns at the bareheaded Private Holly.
Where's your steel pot, soldier?
I lost it, Sergeant.
You can try mine on for size. Sergeant, you're in charge now.
Leadership. That's what I got.
He puts the netted helmet on his head, clamping it down with a tap. Wallowitz lifts a weary arm and playfully knocks Holly's chest as Pop approaches.
Where's Rodriguez?
Oh, he'll be along, Pop.
Wallowitz rubs his arm.
Should have worn my shoulder pads, huh?
Oh, in a couple of months, you flipping those forward pass as good as ever.
Yeah. Left-handed.
Layton steps away from the squad gathered around the jeep. The others watch him, standing alone.
He's a good man, Holly. You're still a little jumpy.
You can move in with me.
You could do worse. He sleeps warm and quiet. His name's Layton. Jim Layton.
Go along, Wallowitz. Take it easy.
Say hello to Sandiford. Hanson, you can move in with Pop.
What about Rodriguez? Does that incoming mail?
No, it's outgoing. And there'll be plenty more of it. What time is it, Hanson?
10:30. No, it must be 11:30 here.
Where's Rodriguez?
Holly looks Pop over, then gently touches his arm.
Let's take a walk.
The two hike off together. Later, a snow squall buries the encampment.
Holly! Hey, Holly! How much longer are they going to leave him out there?
Holly emerges from his foxhole carrying a woolen GI blanket.
Let's party. We can carry him back in this blanket. I want three volunteers. Three volunteers!
As he drapes the blanket over his arm, Pop struggles forward, hobbling under his gear.
Long walk, Pop.
Pop glares, then gives Jarvis a hand up out of his hole.
I need a fourth, a bridge.
I'll be the dummy.
You don't have to, Layton.
Maybe you'll find some more eggs.
They share a laugh. By a tree, Kip burrows in the snow.
What are you looking for, Kip? Your discharge?
I lost my teeth.
You lost them?
Yeah, they took me on a roadblock, so I put them in my pocket.
And they jumped out?
Dropped out.
I hope it's nice and warm back where you're going.
I can't chew on K-rations with my gums.
He continues digging as the patrol passes, watching them depart as his hands flutter idly on the surface of the snow. Alone at the campsite, he crawls back to his trench and squeezes down into the hole. Later, Holly's men arrive at the farmhouse, demolished by the artillery assault. The blizzard has extinguished the smoldering fires, and fresh snow drifts higher under the belly of the wrecked jeep. They rush forward, then hesitate a few feet from Rodriguez's hiding place.
Johnny! Hey, Johnny!
They drop their rifles and plow through the drift. Layton tries to join the digging, but Pop shoves him away.
No! Keep your eye open!
Layton pushes back and stands an apprehensive guard. Jarvis and Holly dig furiously, paddling snow away hand over hand. The fingers of a glove appear, then a hand wags stiffly under their rapid digging. On the other side of the jeep, Pop notices their sudden stillness and looks over the drift. Holly continues digging alone, reaching up to his elbow in the snow. He stops again, then removes his glove with painstaking slowness. He wipes the snow from a buried mound, uncovering Rodriguez's youthful face. Layton comes forward from his post, gaping over Pop's shoulder as the old man stares, glassy-eyed.
He used to see snow way off in the mountains.
They say it's just like going to sleep.
Tears well in Pop's baggy eyes as he covers the young man's frozen face with a snow-spotted blanket, pushing it into the drift. Layton stands transfixed as heavy snowflakes fall on his face.
He was a religious kid. When anyone got hit, he used to say it was God's will.
He stands and backs away from the Jeep as Holly continues working the blanket underneath it. Pop walks a few feet, then stops, leaning prayerfully on his rifle in the swirling snow. Holly carefully tucks the blanket in around Rodriguez, drawing out a fold of it to cover his stiff, outstretched arm. He gives Rodriguez's hand a squeeze and a gentle pat, then stands in the storm. Driving the point of Rodriguez's bayonet into the ground, he marks the spot, placing the soldier's helmet reverently over the rifle butt. Back at camp, Layton reads a wrinkled Stars and Stripes newspaper.
Strategic withdrawal in Bulge. What's a bulge?
Search me.
Hitler's mighty counteroffensive swept on yesterday under a news eclipse from which filtered only the fact that German armor had plunged 20 miles into Belgium. We're in Belgium, aren't we?
I thought it was Luxembourg. Let's see that. War Department authorities report that morale is high all along the front. Battle-hardened doughboys fresh from epoch-making triumphs.
Keep the commercial, Jarvis.
Air activity was halted by thick, swirling fog. Recognized stabilizer terminals. At Bastogne, the 101st Airborne.
Hey, that's us.
Then you will be proud to know that you are making an heroic stand, hurling back the best that von Rundstedt can throw at you.
Who's von Rundstedt?
The Kraut General. The best they've got.
Sergeant Kinney and the lieutenant arrive with mail and rations.
We'll have to wait for the next edition.
Where's Pop Stasek?
Him and Hansen are on a roadblock.
Well, this might be it. Looks official.
A thin envelope.
Chatsburg knows.
Holly throws them over his shoulder.
And the Dog Patch Gazette.
You ought to get back to the aid station, Kenny, before those feet of yours get any worse.
They won't take frozen feet unless they started to change color.
No combat fatigue, no fever cases. You have to be bleeding from a wound. All they got at the aid station is aspirin and iodine.
What about the field hospital?
Captured. Medics, casualties, equipment. The works.
Must have been just after the meat wagon got there with Wallowin. I guess Standiford was there, too. Some of the walking wounded were killed. They say the fight they put up was one for the book.
The sergeant scornfully bares his teeth, then toddles away, splaying out his knees in a bow-legged gait. Later on patrol, Holly braces himself against a violent wind as he paces on his post. Another man sleeps under cover of an overturned Jeep.
Hey, Layton, you're learning too fast. How about spelling me for a bit?
Oh, dreams are getting better all the time. I was back home in Baltimore, loading up on hard-shell crabs and beer.
That dream's against regulations, soldier. You know what our boys overseas always dream about.
Mom's blueberry pie.
Why, certainly. That's what we're fighting for. Boy, when I get home, just give me a hot dog and a slice of that pie. Am I gonna kick if I don't get my job back?
No, sorry. All I want is a...
A figure waves from the woods. A scarf wraps his head.
So long, Holly. So long, Pop. Au revoir.
Kip's teeth gleam in his windburned face.
I found him in another pocket. You're just in time to work Pop shift. Go up and get Hansen.
Where are you going? Special orders number 1437. Private Ernest J. Stasek will proceed to Paris, where transportation to the U.S. will be arranged.
Relax, chum. You ain't gone no place.
I ain't.
Here, read it yourself. I don't care what it says. Nobody's leaving Bastogne. And nobody's coming in, except maybe some Krauts riding tanks. We're surrounded.
Surrounded?
Pop drops his rifle and grabs Kip by the collar.
Kip, if this is one of your crummy jokes, I'll knock those GI teeth right down your throat.
He decks Kip with a single punch, then kicks him in the gut. Holly jumps on Pop's back.
Take it easy, Pop! Take it easy!
He wouldn't have those teeth back in his mouth if there was any way out.
They dive for cover and crawl to the wrecked Jeep. Piling themselves, they protect each other from falling debris. Pop lifts his head and stares at Kip, whom he holds in his arms. Kip hands him the rumpled discharge letter.
Tough break, Pop. You know, I could get him in a lot of trouble for this. It's against the rules of war to shoot at civilians.
Kip smiles nervously. Pop blinks, gazing into his eyes.
Sorry, Kip.
They duck again, clutching each other tightly. Later, the platoon is on the move. A line of soldiers winds across a meadow, passing the A-frame shell of an abandoned cottage. The expanse of white ground gleams like a sheet of ice. Abner saunters past a frozen corpse as they enter a grove of trees.
Them poor devils in a foot slogging infantry. Nothing but walk, walk, walk.
The airborne, that's the life. Great up here in these gliders, drifting along over the clouds.
Jarvis floats his hands like glider's wings, then startles at an incoming shell. The platoon rushes out of the clearing and into the tree line. Holly's men dive flat on their bellies beside him. While Holly keeps the action under surveillance, the men settle themselves. Layton's flushed and dirty cheeks accent his beardless face. He offers Kip a cigarette.
Well, I will have you up in juvenile court for smoking.
Is this your first time away from home, Layton?
Basic training was. I wasn't quite the same. My folks stayed for a while at a town near camp.
Did Mama rub your little footsies after those nasty 20-mile hikes?
She made me brush my teeth twice a day so I wouldn't have to have them all pulled out.
As the kid glares at Kip, Holly throws back his head and chuckles. Hansen points at a black spot in the snow.
Hey, look at that.
I thought it was a shadow. It's just some burnt-out powder.
Die of old age before you see a shadow around here. This fog ain't never gonna lift.
Do the planes have to wait? Haven't they ever heard of flying blind?
Nobody cares. They just don't care.
I don't believe that, Kip.
Reverend Layton will now lead us in prayer.
Might not be a bad idea.
Now a GI races through the clearing toward the lieutenant.
The CO says you're digging at that railroad embankment. The rest of the company's moving back 500 yards.
Right.
The messenger speeds off.
Third platoon. Whenever there's a dirty detail.
Stunned, Kinney smiles.
Let's go, men. On your feet.
They rise and shoulder their gear, stepping solemnly around the frozen men of an earlier battle. Later, Holly finds his squad warming themselves at a fire under a stone railroad bridge. Sergeant Garby stands with them, rubbing his palms together.
Check your rifles. See if they're froze up.
Listen to Holly, making a noise like a sergeant.
He's really GI now since he took over the squad. Right on the ball.
Yeah, strictly chicken, that's me. Let's be chicken those bolts.
Obediently, they inspect their rifles. Garby laughs to himself, shaking his head.
Take your rifles.
Nightfall by the railroad bridge. A lone soldier on guard wears a path back and forth in the snow under the train tracks. His eyes dart about him, surveying the stillness of the fog. Bushy outlines of trees bulge from the shadows. In a deep foxhole, Jarvis lies enveloped in a blanket, while Abner fusses about beside him, arranging his bedding.
Why can't they pass down some information? Man gets hit, he at least has a right to know what country he's dying
in. Now that's for sure. That's for dang sure.
Abner, I've asked you 800
times. I won't say that no more, Jarvis. That's for sure.
He stops himself, and Jarvis throws the blanket up over his own face. Abner continues squirming as he lies down. Jarvis lowers the blanket and blows out a thin, white line of his breath. Frowning at the boots lying close to his face, Abner touches his nose, then sits up and takes the boots in one hand. Stretching his long arm to the rim of the foxhole, he chucks the boots above the snow. Later, the fog curls through the woods, hanging a few feet from the ground. Mounds of disturbed earth ridge a wooded clearing where an occasional rifle muzzle betrays a GI's hiding place. The men sleep nestled together, Kip's chin on Pop's shoulder, Layton resting beside Holly, whose netted helmet perches atop a hood of blanket covering his face. Hansen sleeps with his glasses on. Abner's telltale stockinged feet lie uncovered against the bare ground. Under the bridge, the sentry swings his arms and wrings his hands. The sentry clutches his chest, then crumples to the ground. Layton and Holly slowly peek out of their hole.
Can't see him.
Their view sweeps the clearing. Snow-covered boulders and helmeted heads are nearly indistinguishable in the mist. Garby draws a bead on a spot in the woods.
Rush them, get them! Machine gun, four!
His rifle jams, and he pulls back from the rim, tugging at the frozen breech bolt. A wall of gunfire sends him slumped to the floor of his hole. Now, Private Hansen licks his lips and climbs over his companions to the surface. Slithering across the open ground, he drags himself to a boulder, lies behind the rocky barricade, and takes aim.
Find the fallen! Give him orders!
A volley of gunfire follows. Hansen empties his rifle into the woods. His gloves fumble with the clips in his cartridge belt. He jerks, then bites at the clip pockets. Now, Kip, seeing Hansen struggle, climbs out and follows his slushy trail on his stomach. Sergeant Kinney pops up long enough to cover Kip's advance with a barrage of automatic rifle fire. At the boulder, the men reload with cartridges from Kip's belt, then pepper the shrouded woods. Hansen takes a bullet in his right shoulder and twists violently onto his back. Kip pulls himself over on his elbows. Still aiming his weapon, he lies over Hansen, covering the fallen man's face. The lieutenant approaches them, in easy reach from the other side of the boulder. He hands Kip another clip of shells, then tends to Hansen's wound. Now, Holly freezes, no longer firing. His mouth gapes as he takes in the scene. Smoke, fog, and flashes of rifles discharging. He trembles, then bolts from the foxhole, heading to the rear of the battle and the railroad bridge embankment. He runs across the snow-covered tracks that disappear into the fog and down the other side, stepping swiftly over slippery rocks embedded in the bank. Through the bridge columns, he stares at the sentry, dead on the snow, and the men of his platoon furiously engaged in the battle before them.
Holly!
He turns away and starts to flee, just as Layton scrambles down the embankment.
Holly! I'm with you, Holly.
He turns back and darts his frightened eyes.
Come on!
They sprint under the bridge and around the GIs who are cornered in their foxholes. Charging a ridge to the left of the firing line, they take to higher ground above the unseen enemy. As they lay themselves into position, Holly curls his lip, watching the young private cautiously. When Layton turns his head to face him, Holly winks. Layton grins. Now Kinney stands in his hole.
Second squad! You too, Matt! Follow me!
Kinney breaks into a run, followed quickly by Jarvis.
Let's go, Abner!
A bullet fells a machine gunner, and Jarvis scoops up his Browning. Reaching out for his boots, Abner gets hit. He sinks into the hole, clawing at the snow.
Mama! Mama! Mama!
Kinney leads the squad around the clearing, to Holly and Layton's ridge. They throw themselves down into a straight line. Jarvis mans the automatic rifle at the far end.
Wait till it clears.
Wait till it clears.
Wait till it clears. Wait till it clears.
Jarvis nods tensely to the ammunition bearer and watches the clearing through the gun sight. In the shifting fog and settling gun smoke, a pair of pointed-toed black boots appears. Anxiously, the squad fidgets as the German troops advance. Wearing white pants and hooded jackets, they creep, ghost-like, into the clearing, crouching to see below the fog. On the ridge, Holly settles the rifle butt against his cheek and squeezes his left eye shut. Kinney's cheek bulges with tobacco. Clutching a Thompson machine gun, he suddenly rises to his knees. The squad lets loose from their line on the ridge, scattering the defenseless Germans. Shots flash as shells fly from rifle breaches.
Hold your fire!
Wounded Germans writhe on the snow. The fog and smoke clear again as a white cloth waves from the trees. A soldier peers nervously into the clearing, showing the white flag tied to his rifle barrel. Kinney's eyes widen.
Jarvis, tell him to come out with their hands up.
Waffenweg! Ende hoch und cover aus!
The German throws his rifle into the clearing, then emerges from the thicket, his hands on the top of his head. Others follow from all directions, herding into the center of the clearing. Kinney's men scramble down from the ridge, surrounding their gathering of prisoners. With waves of their rifles, they muster them into a tight group.
Vorwärts, marsch! Schnell! Schnell!
Blake, you and Joe check them for maps and papers. See if any of them are still kicking.
Watch now.
Kinney brings them through the narrow thicket to where the 3rd Platoon's foxholes are dug. The lieutenant sits with Hansen behind the boulder and looks up at Kinney as he approaches with 10 captured Germans.
Get the prisoners and wounded back to Bastogne, Sergeant.
See if we got enough men left, Holly.
I'm going to put this man in for a Silver Star.
He ties a bandage around Hansen's shoulder. Now Jarvis strides toward Abner's boots lying by the foxhole. A sob twists his face. He blinks and chokes it back. Later, the platoon and their prisoners pick through the rubbled streets of Bastogne. Kip, wearing a German's white hooded jacket, shows Pop a Luger pistol.
You know, a guy ought to be able to get $100 for this back in Paris.
Leighton and Jarvis guard the rear of the prisoner line and talk between the Germans.
I thought Holly was running away. That's why I ran after him.
How do you know what Holly was thinking? How do you know if he was thinking at all? Things just happened, and afterwards you try to figure out why you acted the way you did.
You know why I ran? I was scared to death.
You just joined the biggest club in the army. Everybody belongs.
Just dropped me off at the psycho ward. Why did I have to get up and start firing?
It's a good thing somebody did.
Yeah, didn't have to be me. A volunteer.
Happened so fast you didn't have a chance to look at your watch.
Yeah, sure forgot what time it was in Springfield.
Hanson, I hate to ask you, but...
You can have it.
He raises his arm from the stretcher. Later, Kip and Holly wait in a gutted stone building converted into an aid station.
Let's get out of here, chum.
Yeah. Hey, Pop.
The old man waves for them to wait. Crouching on the straw floor beside Hanson, Pop blows dust from the photo of Hanson's wife and infant son. The wounded man beams, smiling wistfully as Pop sets the picture in his view.
Thanks, Pop. I'll drop back later.
Just don't get carried back.
He laughs, then miserably clutches his shoulder. Pop steps across the wounded to a woman in a suit jacket and trousers.
Say, miss, how about giving him a shot?
Pardon?
Morphine. Him.
Ah, no. Il n'y a plus de morphine.
No more morphine, huh? It's great.
She pours a glass of cognac.
Merci, but...
Shouldering past Pop, she kneels next to Hansen, who smiles congenially at her. Cradling his head in her palm, she pours the cognac through his lips. Pop makes his way to the door, around tightly packed stretchers of wounded men. Kip wets his lips, watching Hansen's smile widen with each glassful of liquor.
Well, She pours him one more, I'm going to get myself shot.
Outside the hospital, a white Red Cross flag flutters over piles of rubble, now buried in snow. The squad picks through sorted mounds of abandoned GI gear, jackets, helmets, packs, and rubber galoshes. Layton stares into a giant boot.
They're way too big.
I wish we'd found them yesterday.
They share a poignant glance.
Let's go, man, Joe! What? You heard me, Hot Joe!
Bullneck Betts, now sporting a goatee, jumps onto a rubble heap and beckons his former squad.
I've been pulling KP ever since. We was bombed out twice. I'm telling you, I never saw so much incoming mail.
Yeah, things are getting rough all over.
The men avoid eye contact.
Well, I wanted to go back on the line, but they're shorthanded in the kitchen, see? A couple more KPs got hit this morning.
I wouldn't mind a lactus for a change. How about you and me switching?
Oh, no,
an old woman rounds a corner and bends into the garbage can where Holly dumped his plate.
Hey, Beth, anything left?
No. But it's clean. It's only leftovers.
The woman slinks away.
I don't even see those things.
Well, I want to see them. I want to remember them.
Jarvis jumps to his feet, clutching his rifle in his fist. The men stare after him as he angrily stomps away.
We'll stop back in about an hour. Better stick around this area.
Hey, where's the kid? Layton? He's in the bar, I guess, putting on those dry clothes.
Hey, Betts, how about breaking loose with a bottle of cognac?
We ain't got any.
I'll settle for some hot water to wash my feet in.
Coming right up.
As Pop and Kip wander out of the alleyway, Holly slinks around a makeshift dining table formed from a door set up on crates.
Hey, Betts, you got any trading material?
Well, a belly robber keeps everything locked in the cellar, but there's a half a loaf of bread you can have.
Oh, a half a loaf is... Where is it?
Look at the swore it was on that table.
He carries their tin plates and cups inside, while Holly ducks below the tabletop. Later, Holly throws open the chevron pattern door of a small rustic apartment.
Denise! Bonjour!
Hello, Roseanne.
She slices a half loaf of bread by the table, where Private Layton sits with his boots propped up, blithely gulping cognac from the bottle.
Pull up a chair, Holly.
He lowers himself into a spindle-legged chair and drops his feet onto the table.
Today you are a man.
Layton passes the bottle to Holly, who stretches to reach it without bringing down his feet. Grinning at them, Denise slices the bread with a long knife, holding the loaf against her and drawing the blade inward, dangerously close to her curvaceous breasts. Holly sputters into the bottle and waves a cautious glove, but she just smiles. Later, Jarvis makes a map for the squad using a mound of snow and broken sticks.
Well, this is Antwerp up here. To the north and east are the British and the Canadians. Down here, at Belfort, over 300 miles away, is the French First Army. And the Americans are stretched out all the way in between. If the supply line to Antwerp is cut, at least 20 Allied divisions will be strictly out on a limb.
Where's Bastogne?
Here. And this is where the Krauts found the soft spot in our line. You see why Bastogne is so important. It's at the main intersection of seven main highways, one of them leading straight to Antwerp. We can hold out.
Hey, that sounds like ours!
They look up expectantly.
It is ours!
Dashing from their barn shelter, they turn their faces to the hazy sky.
Can't see a thing. The kind of supplies they've got to drop we wouldn't want. A crate of eggs for Berlin.
Bombers can get through. I can't see 47s.
This pea soup? They're flying way over it. You know that.
Yeah, Cor. London this morning, Berlin this afternoon. Headlines tomorrow.
Hey, fellas! Come on back! It's getting lonesome here!
Nobody cares. You just don't care.
Say that again.
Hey, psst.
Four men in black uniforms holding a white flag approach.
I thought they had us surrounded.
Oh! Buzz Volensee.
A steely-eyed officer with an upturned nose steps forward with a jolly major at his side.
I speak English. Who's here in command?
I am here in command.
We have a message for the commanding general.
I'll get a jeep and take the officers back. Blindfold them.
Come and see here.
Later, in the barn, the squad keeps watch over the German officer's guard, two enlisted men in visored caps. A soldier with a smirking mouth stares coldly at Pop, who blows smoke rings at the German's full-lipped partner. Each floating circle precisely hooks the tip of the German's sloping nose.
Try it again, Jarvis.
Do. Was gibt es hier? Sprechen Sie.
Gefreiter, Berthold Jochmann.
All I can get out of them is their name and rank.
Kip leans nose to nose toward one of them.
Loosen up, chum. Give us the lowdown. You can talk now. Hitler kaput.
The Germans look at each other and suppress sly smiles.
How'd you like some nice K rations?
The prisoners sit primly in their impeccable dress uniforms and unsoiled caps.
Chocolate, yeah?
Pop blows another barrage of smoke rings, exhaling forcefully. When one strikes the German's lips, he waves it away.
You know, für eine Schachtel Zigaretten rede ich.
Well, now we're getting somewhere. He says he'll talk for a pack of cigarettes.
Jarvis tosses a pack from his pocket into the soldier's lap.
Wir stellen ihn ein Ultimatum. Entweder Übergabe oder Tod.
What'd he say?
They want us to surrender. Surrender or be killed, he says.
Us?
Well, tell him to go take a flying leap at a rolling donut.
A jeep approaches.
Raus!
Carries the German officers blindfolded in the back seat. An American general in battle dress brings the jeep to a stop. Sergeant Holly hops out and unties the prisoners' blinds, jerking their heads roughly and whipping off the cloth which snaps their eyes. The general leans casually on the windshield.
Fern sehen, was das alles bedeutet. Verstehe noch immer nicht die Antwort des General McAuliffe.
The major thinks General McAuliffe must have misunderstood. We have appealed to the well-known American humanity to save the people of Pasteur from further suffering. We have given you 2 hours to consider before raining destruction upon you. We do not understand General McAuliffe's answer.
I'd be glad to repeat it. The answer is nuts.
The German interprets.
Nuts, sir.
Ist das im negativen oder positiven Sinn?
Is that a negative or an affirmative reply?
Nuts is strictly negative.
Negativ.
Da werden viele Amerikaner dran glauben müssen.
We will kill many Americans.
McAuliffe stares coldly at the German major.
On your way, bud.
McAuliffe's stubble-faced men stand around smirking as the Germans offer the general stiff salutes. He lazily waves a hand at them, and they march away into the forest. Now McAuliffe, his own tired face covered with a scruff of beard, smiles broadly at the privates. He salutes them properly, then settles behind the wheel of his jeep. The squad watches him go from the charred barnyard.
Well, I feel better. For once we know what's going on around here. For once we get the story before my wife writes it up in the Sedalia News.
Later, the platoon takes to the road along snow-covered and nearly treeless hills. They pass a road sign pointing the way to Bastogne ahead of them. Staff Sergeant Kinney hobbles painfully with stiff knees, dragging his feet along on the packed snow. Cloth wrappings encase his boots. Hobbling and bounding, he drops behind a stand of trees. The rest of the squad falls with him and lies huddled in a shallow ditch. Layton takes a cigarette from inside his greatcoat.
Well, here goes my last butt.
Don't tell me your problems. Tell the chaplain.
Ah, chaplain. I forgot. We've got nothing to worry about. Holy Joe is going to pray for us at the Christmas services.
Jarvis stares as Layton inhales the smoke.
They that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength, shall mount up with wings as eagles. If the fog lifts, she'll run and not be weary. Unless they have frozen feet, and they shall walk and not faint. They don't lose too much blood before the medics come up.
They lean into the snowbank, covering their faces. Kinney stretches flat, exposing the holes in the bottom of his boots. Quarter-sheet leaflets rain through the trees. The soldiers listen with frozen faces as Jarvis reads.
Well, another airmail message from the Krauts. Merry Christmas, soldier, and our deepest sympathy. It's tough being away from home at this time of year, especially when you're surrounded and outnumbered 10-1. Don't you feel your loved ones worrying about you, praying for you? Yes, old boy, praying and hoping you'll come home again. Man, have you thought about it? What if you don't come back? Just remember this, where there's a will, there's a way. Hot chow and safety are waiting for you only 300 yards away.
Kenny's drooping eyes gaze at the leaflet. Then he sprays it with tobacco juice. Now, Pop stands from the ditch, nestling his rifle barrel in the crook of his arm. He stoops and collects a few of the fallen leaflets, stacks them neatly in his hand, and walks away by himself. Later, the men gather and stand patiently before a parked jeep, where a chaplain with a beakish nose erects a portable altar on its hood. His feet are wrapped in cloth bindings. His steel helmet has a small white cross painted on it. He places a cross and a Bible on top of the small pulpit, then looks out over his congregation of soldiers, including men from other platoons.
Anybody here from Ohio?
Buckeye Lake, sir.
Cincinnati, sir.
Naval Heights, sir.
Tippecanoe City, sir.
I'm from Chillicothe. Any of you men Lutherans?
Here, sir.
Here, sir.
I am, sir.
My wife is, sir.
So am I. But these services aren't just for Lutherans any more than they're just for men from Ohio. I merely happen to be in your area. In other areas are other chaplains of various denominations and religions. All of us Holy Joes are switch hitters. Earlier this month in Holland, I held Hanukkah services for some of the men of the Jewish faith. How did I do, Levenstein?
Not bad for a beginner, sir.
Well, now it's nearly Christmas, and here we are in beautiful Bastogne enjoying the winter sports. And the $64 question is, was this trip necessary?
The men of Kenny's squad furrow their brows. A black sergeant behind Kenny narrows his eyes.
I'll try to answer that. But my sermons, like everything else in the Army, depend on the situation and the terrain. So I assure you, this is going to be a quickie. Was this trip necessary? Well, let's look at the facts. Nobody wanted this war but the Nazis. A great many people tried to deal with them, and a lot of them are dead. Millions have died for no other reason except that the Nazis wanted them dead. So in the final showdown, there was nothing left to do except fight. There's a great lesson in this. And those of us who've learned it the hard way aren't going to forget it. We must never again let any force dedicated to a super race or a super idea or a super anything become strong enough to impose itself upon a free world. We must be smart enough and tough enough in the beginning to put out the fire before it starts spreading. Well, my answer to the $64 question is, yes, this trip was necessary. As the years go by, a lot of people are going to forget, but you won't. And don't ever let anybody tell you you were a sucker to fight in the war against fascism. And now, Jerry permitting, let us pray.
He removes his helmet. Kenny removes his jaw.
Let us pray for this fog to lift. Almighty God. The organist is hitting those bass notes a little too loud for me to be heard. So let us each pray in his own way, to his own God.
The assembled men take off their steel helmets, some of them kneeling on the snow. Holly bows his head where he stands, while Pop struggles to lower himself, propping his forehead on the barrel of his rifle. Under a tree at the back of the crowd, Layton stares defiantly ahead. Soon his eyes dart about him, and he slowly lowers his head, tucking his chin into the collar of his greatcoat. Holly watches him, then returns to his own prayer. Later, the squad sits around a campfire beside a snow-caked tank.
When you hear planes, man, don't bother to look up. They'll be ours.
Yeah.
We'll all be going to Berlin.
Pop watches Leighton scoop snow into a cup.
Hey, Leighton. You haven't got a beat-up old chocolate bar or something, have you?
I'm on that new lemonade diet.
Drop another nickel in the jukebox, will you, chum?
A soldier working on the tank's guns turns on a radio.
We interrupt this program with an important announcement. A careful study of the most scientific instruments and maps leads to the following weather forecast. Continued cold, more snow, and no sign of the fog lifting. And now an old favorite, which is growing more and more popular with the men of the 101st. I surrender, dear.
Kip cleans his captured Luger, rattling his teeth like a tap dancer's steps. Their tiny fire blazes vigorously in the center of their tight circle. Now, Holly returns full speed through low branches laden with snow and pounds his rifle butt on the tank turret.
Crowd's walking around down there. Tanks, too.
What am I supposed to use for ammunition? Spitballs? We got 10 rounds left for old Betsy.
What about the tank at the roadblock?
Can't move up. They're out of gas.
Maybe get some news on that radio.
Krauts have got it jammed up. Everything except their own wavelength. I'll try again.
Using binoculars, Kip observes the distant Germans.
They ain't even dug in.
Hey, Holly.
What?
You think there's anything to those stories about Krauts shooting prisoners?
Where'd you get that?
Oh, it's going around.
The way I heard it, it's if you got a Kraut pistol on you when you're captured, they'd blow your brains out with it. Don't fall for them rumors, Leighton.
He picks up his captured pistol.
Anybody want a Luger? It's worth $100 in Paris.
Thanks a lot. It's a violation of the Sullivan Act for a civilian to carry firearms.
Kip heaves the pistol into the tree line. The men scatter under and around the tank. Kinney and the lieutenant watch from a canopied two-man foxhole.
If I was you, Lieutenant, I'd hightail it out of here.
On the side of the hill! Dig in!
They race over a slippery rise as the tank slowly rolls to a new position, churning out a heavy puff of exhaust. A soldier runs out of the woods. An explosion knocks him flat, and he rolls like a log down the hill. Now, nightfall in the forest. A frosty vapor hangs above mounded foxholes where the men stand, dug in up to their chests.
Careful study of the most scientific instruments and maps leads me to believe that German bombers are over Bastogne. Fog or no fog.
Holly stares unfocused.
Kind of rough on rear echelon tonight.
Yeah, I've been thinking. The mess sergeant, the supply sergeant, the pill roller who gives us those shots with the square needle. I'm pleading for them.
The night sky brightens. The white snow takes on a glare. Their heads poking above the ground, the squad members squint dully. Jarvis whistles back at the bombs. A flaring shell strikes the road sign to Bastogne. Now an upper window, viewed from the street.
Faites que je prévienne la mort, que j'obtienne le paradis, la salutation éternelle.
A damaged steeple explodes violently, spraying debris. The empty windows of apartments are briefly visible through a shower of rubble. Now inside the aid station, a coffee pot topples onto a countertop. The nurse reaches to save a quivering bottle of cognac, but it smashes to the floor. Wounded men, including Private Hansen, lie under blankets on the straw floor. Outside, an anti-aircraft skysweeper fires from four barrels. Night falls on the battered town. Near a darkened window, flames consume a wooden shutter, which falls to the street, narrowly missing an abandoned dog. Now a soldier runs into a kitchen, where Betts and another man hide under a table.
Call out the Federal Regiment of Supplies to draw a line.
Right?
Yeah, they just made you a right. Me too.
Betts' boyish face pales.
They told me I wasn't supposed to go up anymore. The medics, you can check with them.
Get your blanket.
As Bet stands, the house takes a direct hit. Thatched roofing and rafters crash in on him, burying him in rubble. His square head and one unblinking eye are visible through the shards of debris. On the street, a soldier alerts the motor pool mechanics.
Hold on for my travel!
Cal?
You ain't even warm! Bottle me, all of you, on the double!
On the skysweeper, a gunner's assistant opens the magazine.
That's all, brother.
Hey, you! Front and center!
Now in the aid station with Hansen and the wounded.
Good thing they didn't send me up. I never even fired an M1 rifle. Last time I was out on the range, they were still using the old three.
All litter cases will prepare to be evacuated immediately to air raid shelters. All walk-in wounded will fall out and draw rifles.
Along the straw floor of the aid station, the wounded men exchange curious glances. Hansen rolls over, propping himself up with his good arm. Shortly afterward, the newly appointed riflemen process through the street, collecting their weapons and cartridge belts. Facades of buildings and snow-covered rubble line the roads of the deserted town. A technical sergeant adjusts his eyeglasses, while another awkwardly carries both of their rifles. Hansen demonstrates the M1 rifle to a stocky sergeant.
This is a 30 caliber, gas-operated, clip-fed, semi-automatic rifle.
Look, you ain't selling it to me, you only showing me how it works.
Oh. Well, to load it, you just pull the bolt back like this and stick the clip in.
Clumsily, the sergeant tugs on the bolt. Now in the forest, a messenger speaks to the tank driver.
What's up, Smitty?
Battalion says to pull back.
Go ahead.
You too, sir. They said to tell you.
The lieutenant hops out of his hole and climbs the hill behind them, with Kinney at his side. The helmets of his dug-in men turn as their eyes follow them to the top of the ridge. The sergeant drags his swaddled feet, knuckling the snow as he works his way up the incline. From the top, advancing Germans are visible across the flat farmland.
It's a cinch we ain't pulling back that way.
In the other direction, soldiers cling to the sides of four advancing tanks.
I guess maybe we ain't pulling back at all.
Lieutenant, take the second squad.
Third squad! Third squad! Over here!
Soldiers charge up the hill after the lieutenant, speeding by Kinney, who stoops in a bent posture, his rifle at his side. He drops to one knee and looks out over his squad, still standing in their holes. Stone-faced, Layton shifts his rifle and aims at something off in the distance. His movement catches Kinney's eye.
Save it, Layton. They'll be getting a lot closer. We'll still be here.
The cold-eyed private sets his weapon down, pushing it securely into the ridge of his foxhole. The men unload their pockets, setting ammunition clips and grenades within easy reach on the ground beside them. Jarvis fixes his bayonet to his rifle tip, and the rest of the squad does the same. Pop, his face pulled into a long frown, stares sadly at his blade as he rests the rifle's neck on a mound of packed snow. On the hill where Kinney stands, the horizon between snow and foggy sky is blurred. He pulls himself to his feet and hobbles down, his encrusted foot wrappings flapping loosely. As he nears the bottom of the hill, a sunbeam breaks through the cloud cover, casting Kinney's shadow against the slope. He leans in for a closer look at it, then turns his face to the sky. His eyes shrink closed.
Hey! It's shining! It's shining!
He chomps his wad of tobacco, trembling. The men blink in wonder at the sunlight as smiles break over their faces, cracking their frozen skin. Layton winks an eye shut and smiles broadly, showing a line of young, strong teeth. Now the rounded wings of diving Corsairs display the Air Corps star.
Hey, Jarvis! Jarvis, look at them! They've got here!
Hey!
Blazing tracer bullets fire from the plane's guns as they swoop low over the treetops, strafing the open fields. From a pilot's view, balls of light home in on a lone Panzer tank.
Blast them!
It explodes as the plane lurches back into the sky.
C-47!
Sunlight gleams on the noses of 24 transport planes flying in tight formation. The squad gapes joyfully as more transports approach.
What was that about? about eagles? They shall mount up with wings as eagles.
Parachutes spill from the plane, scattering over the fields in rapid descent. Supply packages bundled in cloth wrappings tumble from the bays.
They shall run and not be weary. Well, what are we waiting for? Let's go!
Holly leads the men in a run through the woods, after the parachuting bundles that now dot the sky in the hundreds. They dive onto the rectangular packages as they hit the ground, landing smartly on their smaller ends, then falling over smoothly. Their parachutes settle gently over them, like round silk markers on the hardened ground. Holly rips at the straps of one bundle with his gloved hands. Another soldier jumps from a ridge, snagging a bundle from the air and floating with it to the ground. As fog rolls back in, the supply drop continues. The transports bank out of the clouds as they release their cargo. Kinney helps unpack gallons of gasoline while another group moves supplies in a battered wooden sled.
Hey, save me a couple of drops for my lighter, will you?
Hey, I got a little old lamp I gotta fill back in Bastogne.
The chaplain approaches Jarvis, unrolling crates wrapped in a blanket. Stenciled lettering simply reads, Spam. Crestfallen, the chaplain walks away. Now he finds Layton unhinging a box and spilling cardboard containers the size of flat bricks.
Key rations. All dinners.
The chaplain moves on until he finds Holly unscrewing a stenciled ammunition box.
Hey, fella, here it is. Hey, fellas, come and get it.
Soldiers pour out of the woods, grabbing cartridge belts as quickly as Holly can unpack them from the crate. The bespectacled Hansen reaches out a hand.
Thanks, you're alive! As you watch!
Now a montage of battle images. German soldiers on the run, a rapidly firing machine gun. Crates of ammunition, an unarmed Nazi with raised hands, Kinney with a line of prisoners.
I surrender, dear.
A painted stencil, hand grenades, explosive. Kip bites a cigar as he pulls a grenade pin. GIs fire mortars, ducking their heads and plugging their ears. A sharply lowered arm signals anti-tank guns. Heavy artillery fire streaks the night sky. The muzzle of an automatic rifle dissolves into a marching line of prisoners, their fingers locked on the tops of their heads. Now, daylight on the road to Bastogne. The exhausted platoon rests against a snowbank as German prisoners stream past them in tightly packed lines. Holly's squad lies in the sunshine, some with heads bowed and eyes shut. Kinney sits beside the lieutenant on the opposite side of the road, his bundled feet splayed in front of him. Pop watches a column of Sherman tanks approach, headed for the battleground. He calls teasingly to Layton.
Hey, Daddy, what are them things?
Oh, it's a new kind of warfare, son. Mechanized, I think they call it. Read about it in the Stars and Stripes.
Well, what'll they think of next?
Hey, tank job! Cigarette for Papa!
Oui, oui!
Got a Stars and Stripes?
A newspaper sails from the tank.
2 days old. Heard it's been pretty rugged up here.
Yeah.
That's for sure. That's for dang sure.
They read over Jarvis's shoulder.
Hey, handsome.
A cigar comes flying at Kinney.
Good luck.
He holds it lovingly under his nose. On the snowbank, the GIs huddle together with Holly.
Well, the folks back home knew we'd get out of this. They heard relief was breaking through 2 days ago.
Fine, fine. I'd hate to think they'd been worrying.
You'll be happy to know we're in Belgium, not Luxembourg.
Just so we're going back, that's all that counts.
You mean you're not happy in the service?
I didn't say that. I love it.
You found a home in the army, chum.
Me too. Never had it so good in my life.
Along the road of advancing troops, a jeepload of soldiers approaches, following the tanks. Pop nudges the others, and they watch it pass until it stops across the road in front of the resting lieutenant. The platoon braces as he stands and speaks with the driver. Handing in his rifle, the lieutenant climbs into the crowded vehicle and rides off toward the woods. As the jeep pulls away, Kinney pulls himself up and crosses the road to his platoon, pausing long enough to spit on the jeep's trail.
That platoon. On your feet. Fall in.
Oh, no.
Holly falls on his back in the snow. Leaning on their rifles, the men struggle to stand. Wearily, they shoulder their weapons. Their uniforms sag on their bodies. Kinney scowls gruffly at them as they wander into the road, finding their proper place in the ranks. At the head of his line, Toothless Kip grimaces at the long road ahead. Layton smokes a cigarette, which dangles in his mouth. His safety-pinned greatcoat hanging askew, Kinney shifts his weight on his bundled feet. When the double line is assembled, he takes a deep breath.
About pace.
The squad eagerly pivots, but Pop stays still, glaring at Kinney. When the little man grins, Pop smiles widely and turns himself. Behind him, an arrow points the way to Bastogne.
Forward. Ah.
They shuffle forward in two lines down the center of the road, sunlight reflecting on their cheeks and foreheads. Jarvis reads the stars and stripes as he walks. Around a bend, coming toward them, fresh troops walk in battle formation on the shoulders of the road.
Hey, Kinney. Whatever happened to Jody?
Holly jerks his head toward the approaching troops. Removing the cigar from his pocket, Kinney bites it in half and stores the chew in his cheek.
All right, come on, come on. What do you want these guys to think? A bunch of wax? All right, pick it up now. Hut, hop, hurry. Hut, hop, hurry, paw. Hut, hop.
Hanson shifts his rifle to his injured left shoulder, wincing as it rubs the bandage. Behind him, Layton throws aside his cigarette, snarling as he exhales smoke. Kip thumbs his dentures into his mouth, then bares the straight row of teeth.
You had a good home, but you left.
You're right.
You had a good home, but you left.
You're right.
Jody was there when you left.
You're right.
Your baby was there when you left.
You're right.
Sound off.
One, two.
Sound off.
Three, four.
Cadence count.
One, two, three, four. One, two. Three, four.
Your baby was
Kinney taps his helmet to the new men as the third platoon marches grandly between them.
Who worked so hard to keep them around?
Sound off.
One, two.
Sound off.
Three, four.
Cadence count.
One, two, three, four. One, two.
You ain't got nothing to worry about.
You keep her happy till I get out.
And you won't get out till the end of the war.
In 1974.
While fresh troops stream down the hill to battle, the platoon disappears around the frosty bend. A final title appears. The End. Made in Hollywood, USA by Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer.